Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Hey guys, welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It is 9 o'clock. It's a Saturday, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. And today I'm doing an interview with somebody who I've interviewed before. Now, I spoke to this person 3 years ago. Their interview was in the archives. This is somebody who I consider to be one of the most creative magicians on the planet. Now, I have read this gentleman that we're about to speak to has released two books, and I've read them over and over and over again. And I can honestly say there is nobody who's been more formative in my development as a creator than this person. Reading their books really changed the way I thought about magic and really changed the way I thought about creativity. And I would tell anybody, and I've said this on the channel over and over again, if you are genuinely serious about learning how to be more creative with your magic, this is somebody whose work you should absolutely study. The reason I'm telling you this is because after a very long gap between publications, he is now back in the magic community with his third book. And the second I saw this post come up on Facebook, the first thing I did is, hey, can I interview you? Because I know, I haven't even read it yet, I know this is going to be amazing. So I'm super excited to be interviewing today the person who I think is one of the most creative people in magic and just an awesome person as well, the one and only Oliver Meach. How are you doing, Oliver?
I'm good. Thank you for that lovely introduction there. I should get you as my hype man. It's wonderful. So thank you. I'm very happy to be back. I can't believe it's been 3 years, but it's been so nice to be back.
I can't believe I've been doing this for over 3 years. I feel very old, to be perfectly honest. But
yeah, but it's like dog years in reverse or something. You do so much content, like one of your years is like, you know, 3 months. So
I think it might be, but you were one of the very first people I interviewed on Magic TV. And the reason is when I started doing the interviews, I had a bucket list and I wrote down names of people I wanted to interview. And you were right at the very top of the list, because what I said in the intro is true. I don't think, I've got a massive library of books. I love reading magic books. And I genuinely don't think that there's been another book that has had such an impact on me. Because, especially the first book, Block Twists, when I read it and I saw how you're approaching magic, it was the only book at that time that I'd ever read where every single routine that I was reading, I was like, this is completely different to anything I've ever seen before. This is just complete. And every single trick, even though I didn't do every single trick, it made me think. It almost like it reprogrammed my brain. And you've had a massive impact on my career, more than almost anybody, I would say, to be perfectly honest. Your work is fantastic. It's just amazing. Wow.
I'm grinning away here. That's love. That's amazing to hear, especially from you. But I think, and also, it's funny because I had the... So in my sort of going was, I got the Art of Astonishment books when I was, I don't know, 18 or something. It was just like, whoa, you know, Paul Harris and Jay Sankey and that kind of thing. And it's so nice to hear, because one of my, I actually mentioned it in this book, but one of my favorite things about magic is like sharing magic, is that, you know, when other people's like you say, when you get your brain going and people say, oh, I enjoyed your book, it got my brain going. Cause that's what I love about a magic book. When you go, you know, you read what's there, but then you go, oh, but maybe you could do this and this and this and this, you know? And I've always, I've always thought, even with my brain going in 15 different directions. So I just, it's funny. Like I do sort of actively go, what's the standard stuff? And then how can we do something different? But equally, it's not like I'm going, oh, let's be quirky for the sake of it. I just like playing and I just like sharing, you know, going, oh, here's the thing. How about this? And it was so nice because I also, struggle, which I think a lot of magicians do with self-doubt sometimes. So it was really nice at the time to just put a book out, and you never know, you know, you never know, you put a project out into the world, it's your baby, and you never know how it's going to go down. And especially that it got such, you know, lovely comments and amazing comments from people, and just, yeah, from just, you know, exploring and trying, you know, just playing with things and trying different things. And that really, you know, and I love that. And so I've been wanting to feed into that and do another of those, that kind of book for years. And now my kids are a bit older, I've got a bit more time. But it just, yeah, I just love, I love creating. I love sharing creativity. I love getting, you know, magicians' brains going, because it's fun. I think sometimes people feel like, you know, sometimes books say, oh, you really should be more original. And it feels like flossing your teeth or something. You're like, oh, I suppose I should be more. But, you know, as a creator, like one of the bit, you know, yes, you know, it's good because it makes you stand out and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, it's just really fun when you come up, when you have that moment, when you go, oh, I wonder if you could do this. And, you know, grab some cards and, you know, scribble up things. And then, oh, man, that works. And then you could, you know, do that. Like that's what I love about it. And that's what, you know, other magicians, hopefully you get your mind doing that. And I know other people say it's like a muscle, but you know, the more you do that, the more you go, oh, maybe you could do this, maybe you could do that. So yeah,
absolutely. Always love that. Absolutely. And I want to talk all about creativity. I want to talk all about the new book. Now, for people that maybe haven't seen the first interview or haven't really heard of who Oliver Meach is, first of all, you should absolutely check out the first interview. It is in the archives. There will be a link in the description. I have told many, I've had a question on this channel over and over again, which is, how can I prepare myself for the Edinburgh Fringe? And I tell people, go and look at Oliver's interview, because your interview, as well as being a masterclass in creativity, was a mini masterclass in how to approach the Fringe. And you went through everything right down to posters and poster design. And, you know, it was an incredible interview, and everyone should check it out. But just for people that don't know you or haven't seen that first interview, your first book, Plot Twists, was incredible.
Plot Thickens. Plot Thickens,
sorry, Plot Thickens was the first one. Yeah. Okay, yeah. What? So your first book, Plot Thickens.
Yeah.
By the way, I should tell everyone who's listening, Oliver publishes all of his books on Lulu, isn't it? Which is
Lulu.com. Yeah. James is Luca Volpe and a few other people, but it's really.
And the link will be down below. The reason I'm telling you that is because it's not like you can't get the Plot Thickens anymore. It is still available. You can order it, and it will be printed on demand directly to you, which is amazing. So the first book, Plot Thickens, was incredible. It changed my view of magic. It changed my view of creativity. What made you write that first book, Oliver? What made you kind of go, you know what, I'm going to write a book for the magic community? And more importantly, what made you back then kind of go, and I'm going to do it differently to any other magic book I've seen, and really take a different approach with this and focus on the creativity side of things?
So I think I've always been creating things in the background. If it wasn't magic, it was, you know, inventions or whatever, even a little kid, or, you know, posters. And I've kind of had two careers throughout life. So I've done obviously magic as one, and then also so copywriting and creative adverts, because I loved, you know, Economist ads it was growing up and things like that, you know, great fun TV ads when we were growing up. I did a course in creativity on that, and it really taught you to think differently. And they had the phrase first thoughts. If you had something that was good but a bit route one, I think some comics use this the same term as sort of, yeah, it's fine, but it's another ace assembly, or, you know, whatever it happens to be. And so that really sort of helped train me to go, how can you be different all the time, always? And then also, because I was coming up with like an iceberg, like I heard someone mention just recently. There's obviously there's lots of bad ads, but the good ones, there's ones you see, and then there's so many more you create in order for them to be whittled down. And so I was used to creating, you know, 20, 50 ads for every one that maybe went out. So my brain was just, I mean, my brain's hyperactive anyway. It was used to going dun, 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 dun. So I think I was always creating anyway. And then I always love books. And I think some people have said this with a book or with a project, like there's also that, just that sense, you just get an itch that you love this stuff that you come up with, and you're just like, oh, I need to get it out there. And from, you know, nice comments from other people as well, going, oh, that's a bit different, oh, I haven't seen, you know. And I just thought, I've always loved magic books from, yeah, exactly, Sankey Paul Harrit, all sort of, you know, I've got a whole wall full of them. But I really wanted to do my own. And so it came from that, I think. So from my natural love of, I can't remember if I quoted this last one. There's a Lady Gaga quote in one of her songs that says she's obsessively opposed to the typical. And I love that quote because it's like, yeah, if you I take the tip or call, and I mean, I still watch it, but I go, oh, but if you go, that's a new twist, that's a new, you know, whatever it is, everything, everywhere, all at once, that kind of thing, you know, just anything that's a bit different. So when I did want to do my own book, the upside, the downside of self-publishing is you've got to do all the steps yourself. The upside is you can make everything the way you want it. So I work with a great designer as well called Lucy Sunderland, who's done my new book as well. And so she did, you know, like pay, like she did, because she's a designer and not from the magic world, you know, like I love the magic world, but sometimes it's a bit insular. So because everyone sees magic books and then sees that, and sometimes you don't read anything other than a magic book, that becomes, oh, that's the way they look. But I think she was, so my material was coming fresh and going, how can we be different? And then I said to her, I want to, you know, put a twist on it, boom, boom, or like make it thickens or whatever. And then she then took that to heart and then went, how can you do that in the book? So the, you know, even like the little bars along the top where the titles are, in the thickens, they thicken out. And then in the twists, they twist. And then like the word thickens is big enough, so it's cropped off. Although it looks like chickens. People kept going, why is it called The Plot Chickens? I was like, it's not, it's too thick of a picture. It's too... Anyway, so yeah, so it's just like, and then the twist, the S is, you know, so it was just, that's the other thing I think in a good way from thinking about good campaign ideas, like, you know, the Lynx effect it was when we were growing up. Like I go, if the idea for this book is about thickens, how can you apply that to the look of it as well as the word? And also just how can you grab any object? And then... yeah, and then it's weird. And then over time, it's evolved. And then that, when that got lovely comments, and then I did Plot Twists, and then, which is more about sort of variations on things. And then, then did Edinburgh, blah, blah, blah. And so some of my new book, and then got weirdly back into cards. I think like some magicians, you know, you do cards for a bit, and then sometimes you go, oh, I want to do something different. I don't want just cards. And then you realize, actually, you don't have to be do cards or do creative stuff, you can do creative cards. So then my new one's got a bunch of that, like, what, like, you know, with plenty of your marketed things, you can put an own twist on them, you know, they're just
absolutely.
So yeah, so very long answer, but yeah, that was basically, I couldn't not get it out because I just love sharing ideas and I love magic books, so I want to make my own, you know.
But what I loved about, you know, I've read some magicians' approaches to really kind of out there creativity, and although it's very an interesting approach, it's something that a working pro like I am, it's kind of unworkable. It's kind of like, well, I love what you're thinking here, but there's no way I'm going to be able to use that. So it's a, but with your material, and one of the reasons I love it so much, it's very out the box thinking in so many different ways, but it's also material that is absolutely workable in a real world scenario as well, whether that be at a gig, in a close-up gig, on stage, or you're performing socially at a house party or something, whatever it may be. It's actually stuff that you can do.
And I think I think there is often that sort of false choice out there that people think you have to be one or the other. And I've created plenty of unpractical stuff as well. And there is, I have to point, there is some stuff in the book that is a bit more out there, but there's some things, I think sometimes, you know, like we want to go, if it involves more than a deck of cards or an envelope, you go, oh, it's not practical, you know. But then, you know, Piff carried a dog around with him, you know, he does, like, you can make it, you know, Mike Caveney carried a chicken. Like, you can make creative stuff work. But also, one of the basis of the Plot Thickens, or the behind that, was also you can take existing methods that are rock solid, and then you can take them, well, like you did with your, you know, your games, your games cartridge thing, the classic. Yeah. So that's, I don't know if I can say it, but
of course you can. Yeah, okay, I'm very open about it. Yeah.
So that's taking a brilliant concept and then reframing it and putting it in, and then it feels fresh and all the rest of it. So I think sometimes it's that feeling like when you're trying to create something different, you have to go way out somewhere and get some obscure method. And sometimes you do, but often we've got this massive pool, you know, we've got this vast pool of toolbox of methods that we've, you know, created over the years. And then we've got this much smaller pool of sort of interesting plots and presentations. And so you can really tap into that and make it practical. I think like a good example of a couple of things that are surprisingly practical. So I can't remember whether it's in Plot Thickens or Plot Twists, apologies, but I have a trick with a sugar cube and a coin. I can't remember if I mentioned that. And it's a transposition, but it's based on the sense of touch. And again, so you have one, you take one out, they have a feel, they feel the sugar cube, and then you go boom, and then you open it, it's the coin. And without giving into the full method, the method is a copper silver, but applied to touch. So it's like a rough smooth, like so the coin can feel like a cube, basically. But it's just, it's again, I've gone, this would be fun to do something with touch. And that's the doing something different. You go, everyone does sight, maybe a bit of sound. What would a trick with touch be? And then from that, method-wise, you go, well, how do you make a thingy? And then you go, oh, copper silver, maybe, but with touch. And then, so I think that's the thing, is finding a way. And then the other one, which is my new book, is, and again, not my... I think the other thing is sometimes thinking about one time prep and every time prep. And admittedly, every time prep can be exhausting, all the rest of it, but sometimes it's worth it. But also one time prep, you know, like if you're writing names on a you know, deck of cards or something like that. And it's like, yeah, it's going to take you an hour, but you're going to have to do it once and then you can reuse. So it's the same. I've got a trick where you have a coin, and I think I did it in the last interview, where it goes into a pasta sauce jar.
Yes.
As you do, but that is surprisingly practical, because it's a one, if you don't give it away, it's a one-time prep, and the prep is weird, all the rest of it, but one-time prep, and I literally carry it in a sock in my case to stop the game smash. And then so actually to do the trick, and the coin bit resets, so to do the trick is a one-time prep for 1 hour, but actually bomb 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 bomb, sits in your case, get it out. It seems really out there, but you can still make it workable. So I think, yeah, it doesn't have to be one or the other.
That's perfect. Now I want to ask you, there wasn't that much of a gap between Plot Thickens and Plot Twists. It was quite short thereafter.
Yeah.
It's been, it feels like a decade. I don't know if it has been.
It is. It's a decade or more, yeah. Yeah,
it's been like 10 years since you released the third book. Is there a reason it took this long? Because I know you're super creative. Yeah. And what made you decide to kind of say, now is the time for the new book?
Yeah, so I had to go and meditate on a mountaintop for 5 years, and then so the short answer is time. So it's not an exciting answer, but it's time. So I've always juggled, you know, I'd sort of do magic, bit of copywriting, juggle, and then that'd be fine. And then had kids, and I want to be around for my kids, and I love them dearly. So I then it used to be, you know, whatever I was doing, do a bit of copywriting in the day, do some magic in the evenings. And then it became, do some copywriting in the day or do some magic, then look after kids, then get very little sleep. Then the juggling fell off. Or when I was touring. So I just time. So it's weird, because it feels like I stopped creating, but I'm sure you probably are the same when you were building a business. Like the brain's still going. So I've always been creating, you know, I've got lists on my phone because I have no memory. Yeah, I've got like lists on my phone. Oh, maybe this, maybe that, maybe that. So it was just that. And then my full-time job was quite full on. So I recently, like a year or so ago, I left to go freelance to give more time for magic, so I could properly devote more time to that, and partly to finish this book, because I had this long list on my effects on my Word document that were just sitting there. And I'd be like, I really need to, but I just couldn't, you know, when you need proper time to step back and digest and go, how's it going to fit? What am I going to include? So it was that. And then I finally went, now my kids are a bit older, they're, you know, they sleep longer, I've got that little bit more time. And I was like, right, come on, the time has come. I had like had the itch for ages, so it meant I could properly go, properly devote time to, and also I don't want to just, you know, knock something out quickly, like I wanted to do it properly, so like get time to properly write it and craft it and photos and all that stuff. So yeah, that's the short answer, is I now finally have a bit more time to get another one out. So yeah.
That's amazing. And now I want to talk all about it. So the book is called Effervescent.
Yeah. So yeah.
And that looks amazing.
Sorry, I should say, yeah. So it's inspired as in effervescent, as in bubbling, because my brain is always bubbling away. And it's normally about magic. And as I say, so I wanted bubble. I went to my designer, Lucy, and I said, little bubbles. That's the theme. How do you, you know, spread that through? So I'm really pleased. She's done a really good job. I can share two little Easter eggs, which would be fun, which I don't mention in the main blurbs, or sort of Easter eggs, but just fun bits. So yeah, so the bubbles go through, you know, they're coming off things, but in the border, I don't know if you can see this all right, but in the border, they start with not many, if you look here, and then slowly the bubbles start moving up.
Yes.
And then they get more and more bubbly as the book goes on. So it gets
that's
more
so good.
That's fun. So that took her ages. So I'm like, thank you, Lucy. Because that's a great book. I was like, that'd be cool. My wife thought that. And then the other little Easter egg. This isn't a trick in the book. So this is just a random separate Easter egg. But I was like, what should I put on the back? So I've got a star on the back, but it's like an ESP star. Because that way, if you were doing a, and then there's no ESP, but I just thought, oh, why don't you stick a reveal on the back? So that way you can have this on a shelf. If you happen to do an ESP, you go, oh, that's funny. You know, have a book there. You can go, oh, well, actually, because of, you know, that bomb.
That's amazing.
Again, it's just like, why not? Why not just stick more fun stuff in, you know? Stick more fun stuff in.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that. I love that.
And then it's 19 tricks, I think, and then there's 11 ideas. So the tricks are sort of more fleshed out. They're mostly cards with a few exceptions. And they're like, you know, they're fleshed out methods, all the rest of it. And then there's ideas that are sort of, I love in Tom Stone's book, he had those little sort of starting point jumps up, or Rory Adams. So these are slightly, that kind of thing, slightly longer. So then sometimes they're, oh, how about if you take this trick and put a twist on it? So like I've got a trick with Paul Harris's card cuffs that he does with the fingers, but I've got a twisted way of doing it with a couple, and they put their fingers down like that. And then you talk about backseat driving, and then they each take turns to sort of, you know, do a sort of tug of war, and then it changes that way. Or I've got other stuff with a couple of things with movies or pads. And those are a bit more sort of like, hey, how about this kind of twist, or how about that, to get people thinking. And then there's a couple of essays at the end on creativity. One which is called Clocks, Blocks and Clay, I have to say that carefully, which was originally on my blog, but it's about sort of how adaptable tricks are. So it's a way of sort of categorizing, is it like a Swiss watch that you can't change anything because it will break? Or is it like a block, like a ambitious car that you can, it's modular? Or is it like clay that it's, you know, like an impression device that you can kind of stretch it in anyway? So sort of getting a sense of having a think about how adaptable your tricks are, and then that means there's more room for creativity. And then the other essay is 9 tools for creativity. So it's like different approaches, like leap far first is one of them, which is the idea that rather than say, I like ace assemblies, but just as an example, rather than ace assemblies and go, oh, how do I do a new ace assembly? It's tricky. And you're trying to make small little tweaks from there. Start with a big leap and go, how do I do an ace assembly with just my feet? And then you're immediately over here. So then you can really explore. I think in the book, I say it's a difference between like trying to get through a really crowded high street versus sort of wandering around without bumping into people, if the people are other ideas and tricks, or, you know, walking around a field in the middle of nowhere. And because you've taken that leap, you're then, wherever you go, it's going to be more different because you started with this big leap. I suppose in the same way that you have with cards, you know, you go, oh, they're cards, but I know you mentioned with motivational quotes on, and that's already, yep, that's your big leap. So then whatever you're doing with that is inherently going to be different because you've started by leaping far first. So there's sort of 9 ways that people can try thinking, because be creative sounds a bit vague sometimes. So it's like, here are some of the ways if you want to yourself, but equally, if people just want to learn some, a bunch of fun, creative, you know, things that you can do, then obviously there's plenty of those too.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, let's delve a little bit deeper. I want to delve a little bit deeper into this. Yeah. So the 2 essays sound amazing. And yeah, creativity, that's the thing that people ask on my channel all the time. How can you be more creative? How can I flex my creative muscles? And having those 2 essays in there is brilliant. In terms of the 19 tricks, mm-hmm, because obviously we're magicians, it's all about the tricks.
Right? I love tricks.
All about the tricks. So is the book aimed at one particular person? Like, are these tricks for close-up situations? I know you perform regularly on stage. Is it really for a stage-type performer? Is it something a hobbyist could do? Is it something a pro could do? Can we talk a bit about the not necessarily the tricks, although we can get to that in a bit, but just who they're aimed at, or is it, yes, aimed for everybody?
Yeah. So I think there's a range, really. So I've deliberately done a range, and it partly reflects just how I performed. So when I started off, I was doing a lot of kind of close-up, which is plot thickens and plot twists is a lot more sort of close-up stuff, albeit with random objects and stuff. And then I went and did a bunch of Edinburgh Fringe shows. And so then I started developing more sort of stage or parlour kind of, they blur a bit, material. And then more recently, because I've been, you know, around the home more, and I got back into card stuff, so I've been doing more card stuff. So the more recent one is a mix. So I'd say it's aimed at, So it's a lot of the tricks are scalable, for want of a better word. So they're kind of cards, you know, like cards across it. So it's that kind of thing. Like you can do it close up, but you can also make it larger. So, and then there's a mix of, so you can do almost all of that. Actually, I can just go through quickly. So there's like 6 tricks that just use a standard deck, but again, they're different twists on things. I should say also, I'm not a hardcore, I'm very impressed by people who are, and I started with Darwin Autis, but I'm not a hardcore like technician. So I tend to, the methods, they're simple, if not simplistic, or they're mostly, you know, it's your double lift, it's your, you know, things like that. There's not like hardcore second dealing, that kind of thing. So the other three major I can show you, that's sort of getting spectators involved in a casual way. Four for two is a classic, like twist transposition. Say My Name is a card at any number, but done, or not that. It's you spell their name, but you don't need to find you two people, and you spell their name to find the cards, but you don't need to know. There's no pre-show because I don't always get on with pre-show, so it's a way of doing that. There's the rub is you know when you rub a card and it changes color, like the classic, you know, it's wrong and then you rub it and change the color. Well, my kids were really young, they didn't really understand cards. People just I'd do like, here's a red card, rub it on the table. Oh, now it's turned into a black card. So it's sort of a way of expanding that, but then to more of the deck. Thinking Fast and Slow, Whoa. Sorry, Thinking Fast and Whoa, like the book Thinking Fast and Slow. That's sort of applying a psychology method about that people may have heard of system one and system two thinking. So it's the intuitive decisions versus the kind of rational decisions, the quick and the slow decisions. And so one person picks something slow, one person picks something quick, and they kind of match. And then Trick of the Month is a version of sorry, I'm going through, but I hope this is all right. I'll whip
Oh
through.
no, I'm finding this fascinating. I know
Okay,
everyone.
great, because I realize I haven't listed this anywhere online, and I try and make the names, like the jerk says, make them ungooglable. They're slightly cryptic, but it means that you don't necessarily know what they are. Trick of the Month is fun. So Trick of the Month is a way to do shuffleboard, but with people's birth months. So they think of a loved one's birth month, and you do this with two spectators. Then you go through. They say stop when they reach their birth month. Another person says stop when they reach a birth month. Then you shuffle the cards together, a la shuffleboard. So using the standard method, I don't go into that bit. But then when you reveal the reveals say there will be whatever it is, six red cards, and there are, and then it'll be there will be however many black cards, and then it says the number of black cards will match the first person's birth month. So then you go January, February, March, and it matches theirs, and then the number of whatever it is, sorry, spades and clubs will match the second person's birth month. One like, and you go through, and it matches
Oh,
theirs.
that's
And
genius.
then you'll find their card, and then you find, and then it says the magician will find both cards, and you go boom, boom. And it's really fun because A, it's more personal than a random number, but the really fun bit is that you set up, it's one of those you're setting up the in the presentation, you're setting up your stack for forcing shuffleboard, but in the present, you know, while you're talking to them, you're openly setting up the stack without them really.
Genius. That's so annoying. I shuffleboard is one of my favorite
Oh, so
plots
good.
of all time. And I've done so much thinking on that subject. And just you saying that, I was just like, why did I not think? That's just a genius idea.
That was
Shuffle
one of very
back
such a.
in real time to map. Oh, that's just great.
It was one of those, like you say, really like really fun idea, and then such a pain to work out because I was like, okay, so they need, and then I've got to get rid of that star and all of that, and also because I like stuff a bit like Bannon, you know, like John Bannon's Pain to Glory. I like to do like try and do all the wrestling behind the scenes up front in your head so that when you're doing it, you just go, oh, they'll say stop, da da da. But it is really pleasing because then also, you know, it's a personal. Because I'm hoping that also, you know, like when people misremember the details in a good way, like they forget they wrote something down or whatever. So I'm hoping that they will remember that the prediction says, you know, there will be X number, like X number of cards. It said, you know, I was born in the 10th month, and it said there would be 10 cards, whereas it actually just says the number. So I'm hoping there's a then I haven't checked, but you know, there'll be a slight misrecall as well that people go, oh, Annie had written down, he knew how many things I had, even though you're sort of stacking it as you're going. So that's really fun. I don't always do reverse engineering stuff, but I was like, oh, this is, you know, I like to dabble in different flavors and go, oh, here's a bit of reverse it, like here's some cunning engineering stuff, and then here's some just a fun presentation using a classic force. So that's all just a deck of cards. Then unconventional cards, I call this bit. So this is weirder, chop it up, stick holes in it, that kind of, you know, Paul Sankey style thing. So Cryptic Prophecy is inspired by you know, like in magicians' predictions, they're very, very specific. They're like, you will choose six of clubs. And in films and books, they're a lot more sort of vague and cryptic. You know, like Harry Potter would be like, I open at the close. Or in Alexander, it's like, there will be a warrior of black and white. So it's a bit more like that. So you've got a card thing and you've got a prophecy, and it says, one will be whatever it says, one will be black, one will be blue, neither will be white. And so then you show that the, and it's a really, really simple method. It's an adaptation of the cross card, but it means that like one is red and then the other card is a blue back, because I was just realizing another way you could use the cross cut to hide a back, and then none is white, and then the rest of the deck's blank. So it's a little bit like the kick, but it's just again a more fun presentation than just going you will choose the five of clubs.
That's
Drowning in Wallets is because we all have far too many magic wallets, so now I was like, why don't we do a trick with this? So that's a trick where it's like a card to eight wallets, where you have eight wallets, and You tell a story about, you know, when people buy you stuff for Christmas and they go, oh, so I asked for a wallet for Christmas. My mum thought they were getting them, but my dad thought he was getting me one. So I have a second one. So you try and, it's a multiple slate, and you try and find the person's card. And you go, no. And you go, oh, well, that's all right. Because my my uncle also thought that I was getting a card as well, your aunt. And then you bring out another wallet and then they misunderstood. And then you bring out a coin purse. So you can use whatever, but it's using every wallet you've got. So like 8 different wallet in a magic routine. And then obviously the last one is theirs. And then the rest of the cards are all, you know, are all the other people's cards that you found. So it's
That's
just
brilliant. That's brilliant.
Then Finders Leapers is, I'm not showing the full trick. Finders Leapers is my kids brought home is this little guy. So it's you talk about a long jumper and he's got the legs. So someone signs a card, then you bring out this long jumper. They run over the pack like that. They land like that. So you can do a bit of basic puppetry. And then on the end, you turn it around and it's their signed card. So that's
a great idea. Oh my God, that's awesome.
And then what else? On Point, this is again where you start in the rest of the world and go, that'd be fun. Like, you know, the little games like on Twister or whatever have that little spinner. And I was like, there's got to be a trick on that. So again, this is a elimination thing where someone picks a card, you shuffle it in, and then you put the cards out on the table, and then you have this little spinner that's a card finder. You have the audience member. Sorry, it's not spinning because it's not flat. But anyway, you get the idea. You have them spin it like that. Whichever one it points to, you eliminate whatever. Until you get down to one card, they turn it over. It's not theirs. And then they turn it around and the actual spinner card is their signed card.
Oh, my God. That's so good.
Big chunk of time misdirection, which is wonderful. Because once you do this bit, you've got like 2 minutes of them doing this. And you can just, while they're doing it, you can just sit back and just think, it's on the other side. So that's amazing. So that's fun. And then we're getting that all went through. Sorry. Torn Corner Deck is an idea of using a whole pack with torn corners and how that can help. Because Torn Corner, it's not used that much, you know, compared to signed cards, but it actually can still be really strong. So yeah. It was going, but then it's easy to find in a pack. So it was like, well, if you use a whole pack of torn corners, then you can do vanishes or switches or you just other things you can do. So that's sort of a jumping on point.
Okay.
Images is 3 spectators mark a card in different ways. So one signs it, one tears a corner, and then one, or you tear it, and then one punches a hole in it. And then you reveal them each in turn. And at the end, you show that they've all done it to the same card. So they end up with a card that's signed and the corner's torn and there's a hole punched in it. So.
Wow.
Quite fun. Again, took a bit of fiddling to work out to do that.
Yeah, I was just internally thinking, how would you do that? That's just
It was a lot of fun. There was a lot of me going there with a whole punch going, no, not that corner. Oh, I know. What if you signed? Oh no, that was over there. So it was one of those for that one. And then nearly done. Where are we? Damages. Pip repair kit. That's a really quirky one. That's a bit like so you have a card and the pips off. I know other people have done things with pips, but I just like the idea that you have a bicycle repair kit that you go, oh, well, as a magician, so I've got a repair kit. And so you bring out a box and they've got a whole bunch of little circles with pips on. And then you put it on and then you staple it on to be the extra one. And then you rub it on the table and then it, you know, it absorbs into the card. Then it becomes their actual card, but the staple's there. So just, a, you know, like a playful way of adding a pip. Almost so ka-chunk
a lot of that. Sorry, no,
sorry, I'm going more. Sorry, go on.
No, I'll ask you in a minute. I want to carry on.
All right, okay, cool. So, and then ka-chunk, this is you have some like tweezers, a stapler, like to make sort of a tweezers card. You have they pick a card. Imagine you've got a pack of cards here, a case. You put the cards in the case and you say, oh, well, I'm going to use this. So, it's a hands off these like tweezers to find your card. So, you stick it in and you remove one card and it's not their card. And you go, okay, we'll take it, have another go. Then you stick it in, you come out again, you go, have I got your card? And they say, yes. Then you hand it to them. Then, as they take it, they realize that the card's stapled onto the, you know, onto the tweezers card. Oh. It's a really nice moment where, you know, when they, like, you know, when people pick up a solid deception deck and they sort of pick up and the whole deck comes with them the first time and they sort of put it. So, it's a nice thing because you go hand it to them and they go, what's that? And it's a nice sort of realization thing. Almost done. And then, anyway, I won't go through more. Problem solving.
No, no, please do. Please.
Okay, if people are interested. No, because it's... Okay, sorry. Okay, I shall breathe. So, Pinky Pie, this is called problem solving because we know... You do brilliant like walk around gigs and stuff, and I do them, but I do find them challenging sometimes for things. So this was a problem solving was Pinky Perch. So you know when you go to a, hang on, let me grab something. You know when you go to a an event and you're trying to go up to do some magic and then you come up and they've got a drink in one hand and they've got a phone in the other or whatever, or a canapé in the other, and then you're like, oh, and you go, oh, can you hold their drink for a minute? And there's just this little fiddly dance. And it's fine, but it's annoying. So this is a random idea with sort of half cards that, you know, people do that when they're drinking.
Yes.
So you do this is like Dr. Daly's last trick, but you do it with half cards. So you show the card and then you hang it on their finger like a little perch, pinky perch, right? And then you do this, so they've got two of theirs on theirs, you've got two on yours, and then you sort of click them together, and then you show that yours have changed, and then you show those have changed. They don't need
That's great.
Well, that's fun. And then there's also a version with Bert Allerton's two-card trick, the same, you know, with just the two, yeah, same principle, but just a fun way of doing that. MacGyver stands again, 80s 90s reference from MacGyver TV.
Well, I was a huge MacGyver fan.
There we go, it's the magicians in us. You gotta, you know, exactly, you gotta use a ski pole to turn it into a tank or whatever, you know. So that is, I like card stands, you know, when you're doing stuff like this, like, because my style is quite jokey and playful and loose and a bit scrappy, I don't found that the glass is okay, but it felt a little bit elegant for me. And you, I know you can get little plastic stands. I was like, and I suddenly went, what if you can make them out stands? So it's three different, I think it's three different ways to turn, like just fold playing cards. Like, not origami is too strong a word, but like different ways to fold playing cards into impromptu card stands.
What a good idea.
And then because they're cards, obviously, then there's some ideas for tricks. You know, you can then do a reveal at the end if you want. So, you know, it's a joker and you fold it into a stand and you're finding, say, the aces, and then you don't find the last one and there's a transposition with the card stand it's on. But just, oh, and this is pleasing. You see, you know, I was going, how do I do two cards? And then I realized you literally just mercury fold and then it all stand up and you can hold two cards up just with a mercury folded card. I was like, you go all around the house, it's something really complicated. Then you go, oh, you could just do that. So that's that. And then three stage routines. These are more stage from my touring shows. So synesthesia, that's where, again, from doing psychology, there's a condition where people sometimes, when they hear a sound, they see colors, or sometimes people have days of the week that they feel like a different color, so their senses get mixed. So it's sort of a mentalism trick based on that. So first they bite a lemon and they call out red, green, or blue, whatever pops to their mind, and then you predict that. And then secondly, you have a little... music box that you bring out and you play them. I play Somewhere Over the Rainbow or whatever you want to play, and then they pick a particular shade from a paint strip shade. So they pick a shade like this is in my name, and then you reveal, and then the name of the shade comes out, or whatever it comes out of, cabbage, say, and then you do a gag, and then you reveal that you've predicted the shade that they think of. So it's sort of a different framing for a mentalism routine. And then, I'm almost done. And then Bloodhound is, again, this is very weird, but a very practical method. So this is super practical method that you will totally recognize. But the trick is, again, I thought sense of smell, there's not many tricks with that. So I'd used to do it late in my show, and I'd say, sure, you've seen me do this, this, and this. But I know what you're thinking. Can he sniff out drugs like a bloodhound? And so I say, you're not thinking
that's
that.
Possibly the greatest hook line I've ever heard in my life.
And then you see all the audience go, in a good way, you know what? So I literally sniff the, it's very, very silly, but just really fun. So I hand out a bag of their oregano, I hasten to add, like a little plastic bag full of of herbs, or oregano. And then someone hides it in the audience. And this was also inspired by, I can't remember who it was, Kreskin or someone who used to have his check hidden in the audience. And then you go and find where it was in the audience. One of the old performers. So it was sort of a bit like that. So anyway, so I go and sniff the audience, and they've each got wristbands with different playing cards on. I sniff the audience, I find out, seemingly find out where it are, and then I reveal via invisible deck that I've get the person to raise their hand who's got it and then stand up. But it's just a really fun, weird, different. It was also inspired by Leon, the classic film, when Gary Oldman's sniffing out the person in the hallway. Yeah. And he's getting really freaked out. And I was like, sniffing people is just weird, but quite funny. So I play it up in a big way, but supposedly, again, it's but super practical method for a really weird, you know, really weird, playful thing. And then ideas, I won't go, they're all, so these aren't just, these are a bunch of different things. Evolving card tricks, that's the idea of asking the audience, having a card trick that evolves in a different way. So asking the audience, which I did in Edinburgh, what twist can I put on it? And then they suggest you know, on stilts or on whatever, and then using that to stretch your brain to different things. Tumble Shuffle is a way of mixing cards in a Tupperware box. AI Carumba is a sort of jokey thing where you do letter cards and you use the Google roller dice and then you get a message, but the message is RIP human, and you go, oh my god, run away. Yeah, so like evil AI trick. Inside Film, you like films, is a sort of reveal inside one of those 1001 films to read before you die, but there's like a reveal inset inside there. Morph in Time is a way to adapt a classic trick that's normally used to produce something, to change a rounded balloon. You pop it and it instantly becomes a balloon dog. So it's like a really nice short opener. Morph in Time. Kim's Vanish is doing a bird, you know, the birdcage vanish with the cloth on a stage, but doing that, but on a much smaller sort of parlor stage based on that memory game. You know, when you have a bunch of objects on a tray, we used to do it in Scouts, and yes, then you look, yes, and go, what's missing? So you do that a couple of times, and the third time you go, what's missing? You go, oh, actually everything, and you chuck it up and the cloth's got, and they've
all... Oh, that's great.
I just thought it's always such a nice moment. And I love, like, Oliver Tabor, I like Tabor, I've known for ages, and I always love that disappearance, but you don't really get to use it anywhere else. So I thought that'd be fun. Mirror Swirl. So these aren't all fully fledged methods, but they're ideas. Mirror Swirl is a version of Mirror Skill, but the procedure's a bit dull sometimes. So there you've got...
The classic...
So the classic, you pick a red... If it's both red cards, you put them here. If they're both...
Yep.
Black card, and it's been done with sweets and everything else. So this is that, but done with little sauce pots of either custard or gravy. And if they're custard, they go one side. If they're gravy, they go the other. But if they're a mix of both, then you say you have to eat them. So kind of the boring procedure bit becomes, you know, this weird, gross thing.
That's great.
But again, it's just on, how do you get something that, how do you take a procedure that's boring? If, you know, well, I think Eugene Berger has a quote like that about the elimination of boring moments. And it's like, it's literally just starting from mirror skills, great, but all the going through, oh, here's a pair. How do you make that more interesting, you know? Now you bring it up. This is gross. I've never performed it, but it's a trick where they pick a color and you throw up that color. So it's purely for late night. This is in terms of who's it for. This was I never did a really late night. I can't remember what it was, at Edinburgh Fringe, and they had like a show that started at like 1 a.m. and everyone was completely drunk and it was all like raw. And I'm not that out there. I'm relatively wholesome on stage, but I was like, what would I do for this crowd? And then I thought, what would be really gross? So yeah, I've never done it, but you basically go on carrying a bunch of counters and then you have them take one, they take out a color, and then you just, it's smoothie. And then you just go, like, they pick out green, and then you just spit out their chosen color. So
great.
Utterly gross, but a bit different. Props to the Pad is a way of tearing out props. See, it starts like you pick a film and then you write it, say it's Harry Potter or whatever. You seem to reveal it, then they say their answer, then you know, magician in trouble, look sad, and then tear it up. But then you put the pieces, you have them hold the pieces up, and the pieces of them make the character. So if you see, I don't know if you can't see. So this is from Harry Potter. So you tear it into pieces, and then you hold them up, and they turn around the audience. You see they've got the hair of Hermione. This would be the Harry Potter scene. A wand and a feather. So then you get to do Expelliarmus. Or if it was Batman and Superman, you tear it up, you have them hold one above their head and one on their chest, and then they turn round, and then the audience sees that actually you predicted, and they're, you know, it's a nice little photo moment. So that's fun. And then the trick that cannot be finished, that's a thought experiment of going, what could you do? Could you do a trick that you don't finish before you die, potentially? And again, never done it, but intriguing. And then final trick is what I mentioned before. So that's taking the card cuffs and just saying, how about if you do it in a sort of backseat driver couple deciding who gets to move this card, and then they work together. Woo! There we go.
Wow. You know, I've never asked you this question before. Listen to the description of a lot of that.
Yeah.
There seems to be a lot of things that are kind of Sankey-esque. You know, like, was he an inspiration to you?
Oh, absolutely. Sankey and Paul Harris were my two, in my formative years. Like, it's weird. Like, yeah, I started, it's weird. One of my first books was Darwin Autism. So I loved it, but it was so hardcore sleight of hand. And then Paul Harris first, I think, for the sheer breadth of going, do a trick with an apple, do a trick with a lip balm. You know, just like you say, in terms of expanding your mind of what's possible. And then Jay Sankey, yeah, totally. I love... Well, also, I just love premises. I love premises. And the other thing which has got a lot of in that is like playful audience interaction. Like when I used to tour my show, I used to get, and I know this is heresy, some performers, but I used to get like 10 different people up on stage just because I love that interaction. And so I love the, I love Sankey for his breadth because he goes, how about this? How about that? And like you say, and also a lot of his stuff is practical, even though it's really quirky, it's still really, really practical. So, oops, sorry, banging the table. So yeah, I love Sankey. And I love any kind of offbeat, but I don't tend to think, what would Sankey do? I'll just sort of go, well, what's in the world? I start a lot of time out in the world. That's the thing. I go, here's a little game spinner. Ooh, what could a trick be with that? Or here's a, you know, smell. There's not much tricks with smell. What's the trick in that? I often do that. I think Simon Crave does that a lot. So that's definitely the approach is plot, heavy premise. I go, what's a fun plot? You know, a lot of those, it's like, oh, you can smell drugs. Oh, you can whatever. What's a quirky plot? Because a lot of people don't play with plots. And then it's, even though there's method stuff too, obviously, and or it's finding an interesting thing in a world, you know, is it film, is it whatever, if it's some song, is it whatever, and then go, how can you bring that back to magic, just because it takes you to interesting places.
That's amazing. The other thing is, you referenced somebody earlier on, and I've kind of had, you referenced the Jerks, and obviously nobody knows who the Jerks is.
Yeah.
Some of your stuff feels very, very similar to him in that it's very out there. And I had a conversation with somebody. I had a conversation about somebody a month or two, and they were like, who do you think the Jerks is? And I was like, if I had to guess anybody, I'd say Oliver Meach, other than the fact that Oliver's too nice to be the Jerk.
I'm always paranoid about being told off or people being, I was like, I'm super smiley and friendly. Yeah, I'm always paranoid about offending anyone. That's, yeah, like the Jerks is, like, I love it. And he's you know, we email sometimes, and he included one of my tricks in the Christmas thing a while back, which was really nice. But yeah, his humor is definitely a bit more like, he's not afraid to be provocative, whereas like I am in everyday life, but actually online and stuff, I'm a little bit more like, hello, rather than being like, but yeah, no, he's great. But again, it's just that, yeah, I think he's, I mean, obviously his thinking's amazing. Like his, so yeah, and again, often it's interesting because he's thinking about plot. I mean, often it's presentation and plot and how much, and especially with him, you know, like he's, even if he's taking an existing trick, like I know he likes Bannon's Directed Verdict or whatever, and going, actually, you put this framing on top of it. I know he's doing it in a sort of casual performance way often, but like you put this framing and then the experience gets totally different. So I'm not quite as immersive as him, but certainly in terms of focusing on, like, you know, if there is a trick, just starting with a premise. And if that means that you can use a, you know, well, you know, you did the DVD, like an invisible deck. Amazing method. So if you've got a routine and the best route for that, like with the smell trick I did, I came up with a bunch of different things with pre-show so I could actually go up to the person or all this weird stuff, or, you know, how can I track it, whatever, like blindfolds is all the rest of it. And then I realized that revealing it in the audience actually was less satisfying than coming back and revealing it on stage, and actually the wristbands was fun. And it ended up coming all the way back around to invisible deck, and that's okay. I think he's just, yeah, exactly, starting with what's fun. Like, I love fun. What's a fun premise that's different? And also, what's a fun interaction? So, like, rather than, you know, they're not just signing something and that's it. Like, you're like your big red button. I love your big red button for that, because he's like, because they're really getting involved, and it's a consistent premise. I think that's the other thing the Jerks talks about, is that once people are on board with a premise, you've got so much more entertainment potential in there anyway. Like, once someone's spinning a, you know, they're spinning a thing, they're involved, or they're holding something, or they're listening to a music box, or they're being sniffed. You don't have to try and cram in, you know, creative, like, presentation on top of this generic thing. It's already in there because you're interacting. And people are funny. That's the other thing, you know. And if you give them space to interact more, just giving them, a playground or a sandbox and going, here's a thing, that'll be fun. And starting with interesting, what would be a fun thing to do? What would be an interesting premise? And then if that's a new method, then sometimes it has to be. Sometimes you wrestle with, as you know, wrestle with that. If there's a perfectly good method that you know that's worked for years and years, use that, you know?
Absolutely. And if you had to give people that are watching this, if you had to give one piece of advice for people that want to be more creative, other than buy the book, because it seems like there's a lot of information in there about doing it, but if you had to give people one piece of advice, what would it be?
I'm trying to think why I said last time. But anyway, this time I would say two things. I know that's not one, sorry, but anyway.
You're allowed.
One was, well, thank you. So one is actually, we mentioned when we were chatting beforehand, is I think just rethinking it in a different way, I think helps, because I think often magicians feel they should. And it's like they should floss their teeth, or they should exercise more, or whatever. Like it's some chore, or they worry that it's some big, epic, unclimbable mountain that, oh, you know, after 15 years of honing, I can finally perfect this magic, you know. And some of them are like that, but suddenly you have an idea, boom, done, like you're there. But I think the fun is not, sometimes trying to work out how to do it is tricky, but the joy, just the joy, come up with a little thing. And the other thing, I suppose, Magic for Dummies, I really enjoyed the book Magic for Dummies, even though I know it's general public. But one of the things I thought was really smart that they had in there was, I think David Polk is it? Anyway, it was the card trick machine. And he had like basically force and reveal. So that's a really good place to start, I would go. Is just go, take a force and reveal. Because we get very blasé about it because we see it all the time. But you know, like force and reveal. Or even you do some really complex trick. And then afterwards the audience goes, yeah, but Andy knew what my card was. And you're like, yeah. But also it was written on the back and it was in my wallet. You know, and they're like, yeah, but he knew my card. So start with the force and reveal. That's the biggest thing. Take anything that you like in your life. I think that's the other thing, is just look at life. Like magic is this, and it's all there, it's all good, but sometimes it's all magic about magic about magic. You know, like you get some films that are films about filmmaking and it all gets a bit, you know, insular. So yeah, start with life. Go with what makes you noisy, you know, what annoys you, what makes you smile, whatever. Start anything, and then go, and then just start with the force and reveal, and go, force and reveal, but it's on, A. And just look around the world, force and, but it's on my TV, force and reveal, but it's in an apple, force and reveal, but it's, you know, it doesn't feel like a reveal, you pretend it's mind reading. So you're not getting stuck on the method bit, and just go, what would be, force and reveal, but it's on your, you know, I know we love phones, but it's not doing amazing, you can't guarantee you're going to have great tricks, but getting to some tricks isn't as, you know what I mean? Like getting a great, it's doable. I think that's a scary thing. It's like, you know, like stand-up comedians, you might not all go instantly. If you're learning stand-up, you wouldn't go instantly to do an hour show, but you could say a couple of jokes with your mates and they laugh and you go, okay, that's a start. That's still a joke. Like start with anything, but just for the joy, not because you feel you should, but just because when you do a trick and it starts in your head and you go, oh, wouldn't that be thing? And then you have a play and then you find a way and you're like, oh, great feeling number one. Then you go and try it on your long-suffering partner or whoever is your first guinea pig. That's why my book's dedicated to my wife and kids, because the poor things, they see so many half-baked tricks. And then they like it. You're like, okay. And then if you wherever you take it, you take it out, you take it, you stage, or maybe you make the props a bit better afterwards if you want. And then people go, wow. And you go, wow. And you know, that started as a little idea in your head. And then suddenly it's out in the world and people are loving it. Like that feeling, just keep hold of that feeling. Start small, have a play. Yeah.
That's great. That's incredible advice. It really is. So I want to ask you. So actually, we've talked about the book. Yeah. It is available now. Like we said, it is print on demand. So you can get it straight away. And if you haven't got Plot Twist and Plot Thickens, you should pick up the trilogy at the same time.
Yeah, it's fun. And they've got different flavors. Oh, I should add, I'm sure you put the link in, but if they just go to lulu.com and just Google that and my name and my page will pop up and it's got my books on there. So yeah.
And I'm going to put the link down below. Everyone should buy this, obviously, it goes without saying. And I will be reviewing it very, very soon. I want to ask you, mm-hmm. Are we going to have to wait another decade for another Oliver Meach book?
I hope not. I have a little the brain does not stop. It doesn't always sleep, sadly. So no, touch whatever plastic laminate on this desk is. It will not be another 10 years. I do have another list on my phone, but equally, I know my shiny object syndrome. I want to properly promote this and get this out in the world, because my natural thing is, oh, it's done, right, what's new? And I was like, no, come on, like, let's actually get this out. But once I've done that, I have another list on my phone. I have a whole bunch of new ideas. This was not it. This was just where I got to, I thought would be a good mix for this. So there maybe I'm hopefully is the answer. Like, it won't be immediate, because it takes, you know, to do it well and all the rest of it, to polish it and all that stuff does take a while. But yes, I touch wood, definitely, like, hopefully, definitely, maybe to without becoming Oasis. Definitely, maybe there'll be something else soon. There's certainly plenty of ideas in the background. I just need to get this out, have a breath, and then go back to the studio, like the band say.
I'm happy with that. I'm happy with that. And here's a question that I've never actually, I don't know the answer to. Are you available to be booked for lectures? Because I know you've been.
Yes, very much. That's the thing I said in my book. I know I've been gotten, so it's weird. I did, I've done lectures back when I was doing Plot Thickens and Plot Twists and stuff. Because I've been semi away from the magic world in a public creating sense. So the short answer, I should say, very much around for lectures, very much around for shows. Like I took the plunge and went freelance to give myself more time, but I am free again. So yeah, I love meeting other magicians. I love lecturing, and I have a little bit more time than I did for years. So I have a bit more flexibility. So yes, please, please do drop me a line. I'd love to share my stuff.
Have you ever lectured at the Blackpool Magic Convention?
No, I'd love to. I love Blackpool, but I've never.
Well, I know Russ Stevens and Ross Browns watch this. So, yeah. And Guy Barrett, the three organisers. So Guy, Russ and Russ, I don't know what you're doing. Pull your finger out. Okay. All the books.
Yes. I would love that. Blackpool, I love Blackpool. I started going again a couple of years ago, and yeah, it'd be great. I just love sharing my ideas with other people and sharing magic. So yes, please do. Please do.
Of course, I've never seen you lecture. I'd love to watch your lecture. I really
yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. And especially because there's a whole bunch of new stuff. Yeah, it's olivermeach.com. Just drop me a line. But yeah, I think, yeah, no, it'd be fun. And also I generally do lecture I used to do like a little mini workshop of, with creativity within that. I did that for the Young Magicians Club the other day, which was fun, a few weeks back. So yeah, I love creating. It's this kind of thing. It's lots of fun ideas, blah, 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 blah. Get your brain going. But doable, like, yeah, exactly. Creative and practical together. But yeah.
That's amazing. Because I know people are always looking for new lecturers right now. And because you've been away from the community for a little bit, that's perfect. One more question. Obviously, I don't want to talk about... I'm dropping my thing there. Sorry about that. I don't want to talk too much about the Fringe this time because we obviously really covered it last time. But... are we going to be seeing you at the Edinburgh Fringe again at some point in the future?
I hope so, but not imminently. So I'm hoping to take my show Magic and Science Collide because I toured that quite a bit before. So I might take that back on tour. It's mainly, I know this is a boring, pragmatic way. I'd like to, but it's mainly, it's finding the right time with wife and kids and summer holiday nurse. I think I would go... I have another show that I'm developing that's sort of inspired about books. So that, depending on how that grows, that I might take that back. I wouldn't want to, I do want to go, but given the accommodation and everything is so expensive, I would want to go for the right reason. So I want to go either to run in a new show and get that working really nicely, and or to take another show back. And if I did, I'd maybe do, which I've done, like a week or two rather than the full month. It's quite a nice way. So I would, yeah, I do love the Fringe. It's amazing how many people are doing it now. And I do miss it. Every on Facebook, I get real FOMO every sort of August as people go, oh, going up to the Edinburgh Fringe. I'm like, because you've never done it either, have you?
It's never anything I've done. No, I've never.
No, but again,
I did the Brighton Fringe a couple of times.
Yeah.
But I did the Brighton Fringe, and I was quite lucky. Off the Brighton Fringe, I got a contract with for my Illusion show, and that tied me up for like years. And
yeah, exactly. So I think it's a chunk of time away from other things. So I think it would be good. What I might do, I'm thinking of, is in terms of the whole show, I might do a sort of everything but Edinburgh show. So I might do a bunch of other small fringes to run in this new show. That would be good. But otherwise, yeah, exactly. Otherwise, I am newly free and trying to turn this into a full time career. So yeah, if anyone, yeah, I have shows world travel, so that's where I'm at. And then we shall see.
And do you one more question actually, and I don't know the answer to this, and this just popped into my head. You do creativity workshops, you do this, you do that. Would you ever do one-on-one mentoring for people that want to be more creative? Because genuinely, I get so many questions on the channel from people saying, I want to be a magic creator, I want to be more creative, I want to put a show together that's completely me, or I want to create a product for the magic community. I need to, and I, there's nobody really that's doing that. I mean, you have people that are doing sessions like Michael Close does and Jeff McBride does, but they focus more on the performance aspect of things. Is that something?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I am like, it's not something I've done, but it's something, I mean, something I've done sort of informally in terms of bouncing ideas around, but I am very up for that. Like, I know, as a side note, I know Phil Smith did a great recent, I didn't see it, but I know he mentioned that he was doing a creativity thing, more of a recorded thing. But yes, absolutely. I wanted to, if I like, I'm a good brainstorm buddy, as it were. Or if you go, where do I take that? If you want someone to, like, if you've got an issue and you want to go, or not an issue, but if you go, I really want to do a trick with, you know, whatever, a deck of cards and a music stand. What do I, you know, where do I go from there? Or I've hit this bit and I'm stuck. Then, you know, or maybe you could try that. My brain is good at associating, so solving problem, but also going, yeah, if you want someone to just go, oh, well, maybe if you consider that, or maybe you try that method, or actually, how about try this technique in it? So absolutely, that is something that after this I would be very game for, because yeah, I love it. And also I've taught it, I was head of copy for whatever it was, 8 years or something before I left when I, in my old agency. And as part of that, I would teach young creative, we'd have young creatives visit sometime, or I'd have like juniors come in and I'd teach them getting used to creating. Obviously that's in a marketing context or an advertising context, but like the principles of creativity are still the same. So whether it's if it's a more general, how can we try this approach, get working in that, or if it's, oh, I've played with this and I've got a bit stuck, you know, want to bounce some things around, then absolutely, that would be great. Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to ask you one more question before we wrap this up, and this has just popped into my head, and I don't know if you're going to be able to answer it, because I think if I was asked this question, I wouldn't be able to answer it either. But as somebody who's created a lot of magic throughout the years, mm-hmm. is there one thing that you've seen from somebody and you look at it and you go, I wish I'd have come up with that. It's so my style, or it's so clever. I think that all the time. I've thought this about 15 times during this interview, to be perfectly honest.
Well, likewise, when you go, oh, you could just, oh, when you go, it's this but that, and you're like, I think that's a really good question. I think I probably have loads, but equally, I'd be stalled for. I'd say, so growing up, I think the, for sheer surreal beauty, Teller's Shadows with the knife and the rose, because it's so, oh, mm. and his I mean, you know what a thinker, but like the and his the Miser's Dream with the water and stuff, like just the scene, okay. What I love, I mean, I don't always do that scene, especially with that latter one, the like the beautifully seamless idea, which is slightly surreal, and it doesn't, you know what I mean? It's not like a logical, oh, and then water and then learn, but it just so works. And the setting with the chair and the water, it just, it's so elegant simplicity. I love that. Yeah, I wish I'd come up with that. And I wish, and also people who manage to do amazing amounts with a little. So things like, so John Gustafaro's Truth in Advertising. Oh, sorry, my phone.
Yes.
You've got one extra card. This isn't a revealing method, but you've got one extra card. And with that, you can do a trick where the entire deck is blank. Then there's a like colored card, except one card, whatever, which has a different color back, but then it entirely flips. So then you've just got one blank card thing. And that's just from one card. Like that, mm. that level, or David Williamson's Color Stunner in a similar way, or some balance stuff. You just go, you've extracted. I think as I've got back into card magic more recently, a couple of times when you see something, you just go, oh, and for sheer usability and smart thinking, it's a classic, but Max Maven or Phil Goldstein's B-Wave. Just not the method, but just the fact that that bizarre psychology thing that you go, revealing the card should be enough, but the fact that it's got a different colored back and the fact that it's clean. I really like methods where you've got three reveals there, but just from one force, you know? Or Derren Brown, sorry, I'm associating one more. Derren Brown, ages ago, one, I maybe it was in The System or something, when he had a whole bunch of post-it, not post-it, Polaroid photos up, and then someone picked mm-hmm. a person. But then it was something about the names went together, and then the names were in order, and then the photo, and he managed to like get, I can't remember, it felt like there were like four or five reveals out of it, but because you revealed just forced one thing, and then you put the names together and that did a thing, and then you turned them over and that did a thing, and this like trickling out from just one force, so you've suddenly got, or however it was done, you've got multiple reveals going on that's not, yeah, stuff that works, you're wringing more magical entertainment out of the same few things, especially when it's based on just how people think. Like, you know, like blank deck reveal is just inherently for lay people just like, whoa. And you're not, it's not any harder than revealing the cards are all black or whatever. Then, but it just is. So that level where you just go, you're really thinking. Any of those where you just go, oh, you know, and that is that when they're so minimalist as well, that's where you go, you can improve other things, but you just go, well, where'd you go? It's so flawless. Like, it's just, where are you going to start with that? You just go, okay, you just admire it. And you just go, oh.
Absolutely. 100%. Completely agree with that. I'm really glad, actually, one of the things you said was tell us a miser's dream. I remember the first time I saw that live. I got married in Vegas. Me and my wife. It's not as sleazy as it sounds. It was planned. It's not like we went through a drive-through and got married by Elvis Presley. It was actually planned. But our wedding night entertainment, we went to see Penn and Teller, and I went to see them with Sarah, my wife, and as a coin worker, I just watched that entire thing for the first time. Just jaw open, just like, how is he doing this?
They're empty.
And then it's just like,
it's coin. And also it's got an ending. Like, Miser's Dream is, you know, legendary trick doesn't always have an ending. And then you're like, this is great. And you're going, why the glass bowl? And it's a bit, and also it's that great surprise, but logical in retrospect. You're like, why is he holding a fishbowl to put the coin? And then it's just, you know, that feeling that you don't always get that often. What takes you back to just being like that, just that, oh.
Yeah, that right there. I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah.
I mean, I am so happy that you freed up some time to sit down and chat.
Oh, well, no, not at all. This is a pleasure. I love sharing. I'm so happy you did too. I know you're juggling 15 projects at any one time. So nice to talk, you know, creator to creator, because you know how it, you know, it's like really nice to share, you know, all the wonderful things and all the bits that go on with you know, interesting ideas.
Absolutely. And anyone who's watching this, the you wouldn't believe how long it takes to bring something like this to fruition. Like, you're just seeing this wonderful blue book that he's holding, and it's got all of these the amount of time and effort that you must have put into to get that book into that position, especially you've done it all yourself.
And a quick shout out, I've done it myself, but I also a quick shout out. Oh, sorry, in terms of creativity, also, like, ask other people, at least they get help. So, yeah, so I've honorable mentions to like wonderful people. So, obviously, my wife for support and everything else. The Lucy who designed it, also Mike Vance, I'm not sure how to pronounce, but brilliant, you know, does a lot of proofing for other people. Lovely guy, offered to do it, did a great job. He's great because that, I think, so much in, you know, I'm not the first person to say this by far, but recognizing what you're good at and not so good at in life is really helpful. And I know that I'm really creative. I know that I can write, hopefully, like in a nice, smooth way. I know that my minutiae of proofing is not my top skill. Whereas he could go through, and even though with my copywriting brain, I'd gone, oh, I pretty much caught everything. It was really good. He was going bum 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 bum. Also, as a left-hander, you have to write it all as left-handed, and then you have to swap all over to right-handed. While picturing it, you know, but obviously the indices of card don't swap, so not everything. So that bit, and then crediting. I think crediting is really important in magic. So I've tried to credit really well. So big, you know, there's a big acknowledgement, thanks at the end. But everyone, like Magic Circle, everyone else who when I couldn't find particular credits, and Liam Montier, who looked over the book, he helped with credits. He also had his own ideas. So there's a couple of pages of his own twists on things. But yeah, like all the, it takes a village to raise a child, and it takes a village to write a book. But yeah, just the you know, the photos, the layout, the proofing, the credits, there's a lot. Well, like, you know, like with, you know, same with releasing your tricks, like you do all the, you know, the trailers and everything else behind the scenes. There's a lot that goes along behind the scenes. So it's so nice when people, you know, well, they do appreciate, because it is a lot of work that goes on. So do support all other creators out there, because it makes them feel good, and then they're more likely to release more.
Absolutely. And Oliver, thank you so much for coming on the channel. I'm sure this is not going to be the last time that I see you on Magic TV. I'm sure I'll see you on here again. And I cannot wait to review the book. I just can't wait to read it. I know that I'm just going to lock myself in a room for a couple of days and just be there, because it's just I meant every word that I said. Plot thickens, plot twists, two of my favorite books of all time. And I'm so glad that I now have a trilogy and waiting patiently for book number four. So it's not going to be a decade. I will literally read if I have to.
All right, it's a
but I want everybody who's watching this interview to do a couple of things. The first thing I want you to do is, if you have a magic club or a magic society that are booking lectures and you want an amazing lecture that they probably haven't seen before, reach out to Oliver. His website's down below, olivermeach.com. And he is available for lecture booking. Same as if you're organizing a convention and you want an amazing lecturer that's really different to anyone else out there, please go ahead and contact Oliver. Secondly, go on the link down below and go and buy Effervescent. And while you're at it, if you haven't got Plot Twists and Plot Thickens, you know, like sometimes you read magic books and they're kind of a bit out of date because they're like 10 years ago. And the material in those books is just as good today as it was when Oliver first released them. So make sure that you go and pick up all of his books if you haven't got so. You haven't got them. You can go and do that immediately. Follow him on social media. Do all of that fun stuff because I think everybody should support you, Oliver, because honestly, you're amazing. You are absolutely amazing, and I'm well, huge.
Thank you. It's been wonderful. I love talking magic. I love chatting with you. It's great. So, yeah.
No problem at all. And
I'm Oliver Meach on Facebook, so I'm not big on other things. But yeah, just drop. I'm Oliver Meach on Facebook. Just yeah, connect. I always like meeting other magicians. Definitely.
There you go, Oliver Meach on Facebook. I'm connected. You should be connected as well. And one more time, Oliver. Thank you so much for coming on the channel. Really appreciate it. And guys, thank you very much for watching this interview. One more thing, leave a comment down below. Let Oliver know what you thought of the interview. I thought it was amazing. Leave a comment down below. He will see the comments. If you haven't seen the interview that we did 3 years ago, please check that out because it's full of even more wonderful advice. I'll be back next Saturday with another Talk Magic. But on behalf of Oliver Meach, thank you for joining us this week on Magic TV. And I'll see you again soon. Oliver, one more time, thanks very much.
Thanks a lot. Lovely to be here.
Guys, see you again soon.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic, magic.
Be
magic.
Sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV. Or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.